Unidentified flying objects, flying saucers, those things that we hear about, and some of us see, and some of us don't. We have an expert on the subject, Mr. Ray Fowler, whose full-time occupation is that of a member of the scientific, the electronic community, and who avocationally is chairman of the Massachusetts subcommittee of NICAP, which probably is the most respected organization in the entire world which goes into the field of UFOs. We'll be back in about 60 seconds. My guest this evening, as I said before, is Ray Fowler, chairman of the Massachusetts subcommittee of NICAP, the organization most respected throughout the entire world in the field of unidentified flying objects. Now, there are those who believe in them, very frankly, and there are those who say that they are hogwash. I think it's safe to say, sir, that in the minds of a great many people in the general public, that there is a feeling that even though we haven't seen flying saucers or flying objects that we can't identify to our satisfaction, that we have the at least sneaky feeling that where there is this much smoke, there has to be a little bit of fire somewhere.
Anybody who has studied the UFO problem over the years would be convinced that UFOs are real. Now, whether they are interplanetary is another question, of course. I personally believe that there is good observational evidence, not proof, mind you, but good observational evidence that there are unknown objects coming into our atmosphere under intelligent control, and that they have been seen by people from all over the world, ruling out any aircraft that we, the United States, might have, or any other country, because of the fantastic maneuvers, the ability to take right-angle turns, for example, at fantastic speed, the ability to hover for several minutes and then move off at blinding speed. I believe that they're under intelligent control because they behave like intelligently controlled objects.
Well, now, could these be something known as cosmic coincidence? Could these be explained away as astrophysical phenomena, light reflections and refractions?
The United States Air Force and NICAP and any reputable UFO group would agree that there are many objects which can be identified either as misinterpretation of natural phenomena or misidentification of common aircraft. I would say that out of all the reports that we, the NICAP Massachusetts subcommittee, receive, that about 80% can be explained as either misinterpretation of natural phenomena, such as the planet Venus. We've gotten quite a few reports of the planet Venus as being a UFO over there in the west. Planet Jupiter, sun dogs, light reflecting off from aircraft and what have you. But there is a good 15 to 20% of UFOs that cannot be explained. And these are not just lights in the sky. These are functional-looking objects, solid objects that have been seen at close range. Some people have been fortunate enough to get within a few hundred feet of these objects, and recently, too. And what they saw was certainly no conventional object.
Recently, a group of psychiatrists out in Chicago came forth with a fascinating explanation for UFO sightings. They said that more and more people are engaging in a process known as hallucinating, either at a conscious or a subconscious level, and that they are quite honestly and quite accurately thinking that they see these things, either by choice or by lack of choice. But that this is a process of the mind, that it's almost a form of psychosomatism, such as you would find in I suddenly decide that I have a disease, and even though I don't have one physiologically, if I think I've got it, it still hurts.
I'm sure that this is true in some cases. In the study of UFOs, as in the study of any subject, whether it be politics, theology, philosophy, or what have you, there are various positions. And there is a certain position, a certain group within the study of UFOs, which is known as the contactee position. These people, of course, are the ones who have met the beings from outer space, the brothers from on high who have a revelation to our planet Earth, who have come to bring peace on Earth and what have you. They have been invited aboard the craft, have flown to Venus and Jupiter and throughout the solar system.
I think George Adamski has now left, hasn't he?
That's right. George Adamski has left.
We don't know just how.
But there are many people, good, sane, reliable people, people with highly technical backgrounds, airline pilots, for example, who have flown for years and years.
And who are trained observers in the sky.
Right. Yes. Dr. J. Allen Hynek, recently he came out with an article, I believe, in Christian Science Monitor concerning this subject. In a 1961 issue of Yale Scientific Magazine, said the following. Now, J. Allen Hynek is the chief UFO consultant for Project Blue Book, the Air Force project. And he said this concerning people who see UFOs. The surprising thing is that the level of intelligence of the observers and reporters of UFOs is certainly at least average, and in many cases, decidedly above average. In some cases, embarrassingly above average. And this comes from a man who has studied perhaps more UFO reports than we personally will ever see.
I don't know whether there is a direct corollary here, Mr. Fowler, but the Yale Institute for Alcohol Studies has found that the average IQ of the alcoholic is substantially higher than that of the general public.
If UFO sightings depended just upon the human senses alone, one would also begin to suspect that such a thing could be true, that these could be hallucinations. But there have been many cases where electronic equipment have picked up UFOs, such as radar. That is, a number of people have seen an object in the sky. Radar, several radars sometimes, have picked this object up and has tracked the object. A good solid return. The radar following the maneuvers, the human eye following the maneuvers, and what have you. UFOs also have been seen on the ground and have left physical evidence. One of the best, I would say, UFO sightings we've had in several years took place down in Socorro, New Mexico. And here we have a policeman who approached within about 100, 200 feet of one. If you care to go into this sighting,
I'd like to go into it. Very, very
interesting. The place where the UFO sighting took place was Socorro, New Mexico. The sighting took place on April 24, 1964. The witness was patrolman Lonnie Zamora. He was chasing a speeding car on South Park Street down in Socorro when he heard this tremendous roar and looked out to his right out the window and saw this blue cone-shaped flame coming out of the sky and descending beyond the hills. Thinking this very unusual and knowing that there was a dynamite shack in the area, he radioed back to headquarters that he wasn't going to chase the car any longer, but he was going to investigate this explosion. He rode down a dirt road to a mesa, I guess they call the hills mesas down there, and get up on top.
That's what they call them, sir.
Right.
Yes, sir. I know that part of the country.
And he got on top of a mesa, and he looked over to another mesa, and in the gully over there, he saw what at first looked like an automobile turned upside down with some people standing by it, two people. Another look, though, convinced him that he wasn't looking at an automobile at all. It was a white object, elongated and on four stilts. And the people, or whatever they were only 3.5-4 feet tall. Well, again, he radioed back, told headquarters what he had seen, and asked for the state police to come out at once and help him. Then he proceeded down into the gully, losing sight of the object momentarily, and then getting up on top of the mesa just adjacent the gully where this object was. And there it was. He looked out the car window. There it was. The people or creatures or whatever they were gone, but there was the object as plain as day. He again radioed back to headquarters what he was witnessing and said he was going to leave the cruiser to investigate. He got out of the cruiser, and he only had taken several steps toward the object when this blue flame appeared at the bottom of the object, and a loud, ear-splitting roar came from the object. He thought it was going to blow up in his face, and he turned and started running. He went right by the cruiser, and he got down, crouched down, and he watched the object. The object lifted off the ground for about 20 feet off the gully, and then it stopped. The blue flame shrank very slowly to nothing. The roar stopped, and a very high-pitched whine took over, dropping quickly to a low-pitched whine, and then it was completely silent, and then it moved off following the contour of the gully. He said when it moved off, you could have heard a pin drop. Seconds later, Sergeant Samuel Chavez of the New Mexico State Police arrived on the scene. Both of them went down in the gully. There were four large indentations, 12 inches by 6 inches, and approximately 6 inches deep. In the area between these four indentations, the greasewood was burning, the shrubbery was burning, some of the shrubbery was broken. Something physical had been there. The Air Force made a complete investigation, as NICAP did as well, and J. Allen Hynek again, whom I mentioned earlier, came out publicly stating that after his investigation, he was convinced that Lonnie Zamora was telling the truth.
Isn't it curious that usually these sightings are affected by solitary people, not by people in groups? At least those that I have heard of have been the experience of individuals. Rarely will we find reports, or have I heard of reports of, shall we say, a sighting by 80,000 people in the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, Texas, or in one of the huge in Times Square, you know?
There have been many sightings. In fact, in this documentary I have in front of me called The UFO Evidence, which is available to the public from NICAP, are hundreds of reports selected from thousands of reports from NICAP's file, which will give you in detail documented reports such as the type that you haven't seen.
Of group sightings.
Let me tell you of one that was very interesting. Interesting in that it only occurred several miles from where I live in Wenham, not too many miles from Boston, and took place in the Exeter, New Hampshire area. And it involved four persons, two of them police officers, one of whom got within 100 feet of the object. It all started in the early morning hours of September 3rd, 1965. Patrolman Bertram of the Exeter, New Hampshire Police Department was patrolling the roads around Exeter. And this was just after midnight, and he came across this woman parked by the road all alone. He wondered what was going on, so he pulled up in the cruiser and said, "What's the matter, lady? Can I help you? Are you out of gas?" And she was so frightened she could hardly talk. She described this object which had chased her between Epping and Exeter as being egg-shaped, carrying bright, pulsating red lights. The object actually made passes at her. Well, this was too much for Officer Bertram. He listened very politely and then went on his way after he felt reasonably sure that the woman was all right and forgot about it. He didn't even take her name or her address. He'd been patrolling the roads, and about a half hour later, he got an emergency call from police headquarters in Exeter asking him to report immediately that a teenage boy, a hitchhiker, had just stumbled into the police station in a near state of shock, claiming that he had been approached by this huge object along Route 150. Well, Bertram was so sorry he didn't...
Hadn't made passes at him, too?
We're getting to that. And he was very sorry then that he hadn't gotten the name and address of the woman, but he shot back to headquarters. Now, this boy, Norman Muscarello, was hitchhiking between Amesbury, Massachusetts and Exeter along Route 150, which is a very dark road, no lights or anything, and as he was walking between two farmhouses, there's a big field there. And all of a sudden, the field lit up bright red. It was just like dawn, he said. And he looked up, and he couldn't believe what he saw. Coming across the field in sort of a rocking motion was this huge egg-shaped object carrying five red pulsating or rotating lights. It continued to come toward him. He dove up against the stone wall. He was petrified. He didn't dare to move. It came by him and hovered over a house, the house of Mr. Carl Dining, I believe. No, Carl Russell. The house was only 30 feet away, and he could tell by the size of the house that the object was at least 80 or 90 feet long. Not a bit of sound came from this object. It hovered there for a very long 5 minutes, and then it took off over the tree line. Well, as soon as that object got out of there, Norman got up, and he went and pounded on that Mr. Russell's door, yelling for help. Mind you, this is in the early morning hours, around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Russell got up and asked him what was the matter, and he said he was chased by a flying saucer, because they thought they had a drunk on their hands, and they told him to get lost.
Loony, anyway, didn't
Right. So he took off down the road, scared stiff. And a car came by, fortunately, and picked him up and brought him to the police station. And that's when the call was made to Bertram. Well, Bertram came in, and they interrogated the boy, and they decided that Bertram should go back to the field and take a look for himself. Well, he did. They went back to the field, and they sat there in the cruiser, and they couldn't see anything. Well, Bertram was just about to give up and come back, and when he was instructed from headquarters that he ought to go out in the field and flash the light around and make a routine check anyhow. So Bertram and Norman went out in the field. He said they had gotten about 100 feet out in the field, and he was flashing his light around, very disgusted with the whole thing, when all of a sudden the kid yelled, "Look out, here it comes." He said he whipped around, and he couldn't believe what he saw. Here was this big object, seemed to him bigger than a house, coming across the field parallel to them, carrying these five bright red lights, so bright he said you couldn't even look at them without your eyes hurting. All of a sudden, the object stopped, it tilted, and started to close on them. He, without even realizing it, pulled out his revolver and started to yell, "I'm going to shoot it." And then he thought better of it and put the revolver back in his pocket, and by that time, he said it was about 100 feet up, about 100 feet from them, and it was the red lights were so bright that he couldn't even hardly see, and he yelled for the kid to take cover in the cruiser. Well, Norman just froze. He didn't move. So Officer Bertram said he had to grab the kid and practically drag him across the field to the cruiser. He said he could hardly hold the microphone, had to call headquarters for help, but he did. He called headquarters, and Officer Hunt came on the scene. The three of them stood there for about 10 minutes and watched this UFO hovering about 100 feet off the ground over this field, not a bit of noise coming from it, in this rocking motion and the lights flashing on and off in sequence.
Now, independently interrogated these three individuals till substantially the same story.
Yes,
this is
right. I went up to the
very key point.
Yes, the Air Force was up there just ahead of me. They made a complete investigation. In fact, the first thing they told the policeman was to not report this to the public, to keep it quiet. But it was too late. Several newspapers had already heard about it and had reporters out there and gotten pictures, and it broke the next day. And then I was told by several people that some of the Air Force officers were buying up the papers in the area. But their investigation took place over several days. I went up and got signed statements from the witnesses. It's very interesting to also note that John Fuller of the Saturday Review heard about this report, and I sent him a summary copy of what we sent to NICAP, and his magazine made a complete check of the sighting as well. It checked my investigation step by step and published it in the October 2nd issue. He himself also went up there and talked to the witnesses and was convinced that this sighting actually took place. Of course, the Air Force since then has come out and said that there was a temperature inversion that night, and what the officers saw were probably stars or planets blinking under strange atmospheric conditions. This is typical of the Air Force type of answer to a sighting like this.
My guest is Ray Fowler, the chairman of the Massachusetts Subcommittee of NICAP. We're talking about UFOs. We're going to very soon open up the phones. And I'm sure that some of you have had sightings. Be sure that you've had sightings and that you aren't just, in fact, sinking. I'm glad that you said magazine, sir, because this leads me into one of our sponsors. You're tuned for Radio 68's Boston Forum. My name is Haywood Vincent. My guest is Ray Fowler, the chairman of the Massachusetts Subcommittee of NICAP. And we're talking about UFOs, unidentified flying objects. What they mean, whether they're real, whether the people who see them have been, at things called pot parties, whether they are trying, as some have indicated, this is a theory that's been put forth too, I think we might go into, Mr. Fowler, there are a great many people who are of more than average intelligence, who have failed to achieve what in their own mind is their own potential, and they are seeking some type of notoriety. Sometimes these people turn into gangsters. Sometimes they confess to crimes which they haven't had any part in. I think our various police groups can substantiate this. They are seeking to be known and to be recognized. And there are those who feel that they're are some who claim that they have seen UFOs and who can describe them in meticulous detail, who know that as a result they'll find their names in NICAP bulletins, they're going to be interviewed, they're going to be in the press, on radio, on TV, and that they seek this sort of recognition. Would you comment?
I'm sure that you'll find many individuals like this, not only in NICAP, but in any group, whether it be a religious group, an organization like NICAP. In fact, the contactee group I mentioned has almost become a religious type cult. I believe, although I am a Christian layman, I believe in many cases the churches have failed in many ways, and that people are turning to these cults and UFO cults, if you will. This type of person that you mention especially, they're very gullible. P.T. Barnum said that there's a sucker born every minute. And men like George Adamski and others like him are able to get quite a following. And, well, George Adamski started out as a janitor at Palomar Gardens at a little restaurant on the foot of Mount Palomar where our big 200-inch telescope is. And, and he ended up with hundreds of thousands of dollars. His name known throughout the world, written several books on the subject, and even now his name, his works are being carried on. However,
he's been pretty much denounced, though, by the responsible people in this field, has he not, sir?
Definitely. NICAP has investigated all major contactee cases and groups and have found them the type of group that you mentioned. NICAP frowns upon contactees. We feel that they do more harm than government suppression. Let us take a look at some of the people who are on the NICAP Board of Governors. Perhaps this would answer your question a little bit better, Haywood.
All right.
Our first chairman of the Board of Governors, for example, was Vice Admiral Roscoe H. Hillenketter, former head of the Central Intelligence Agency. He was on our Board of Governors for 5 years, and he made many public statements to the press during his tenure, one of which is, quote, "The unknown objects are operating under intelligent control. It is imperative that we learn where they come from." Another board member, Rear Admiral Del Mafani, former chief of the Navy Guided Missiles Division, stated, "Reliable reports indicate that unidentified objects are coming into our atmosphere at very high speeds and that they are controlled. We have several men on our Board of Governors and panel of special advisors who were in the United States Air Force UFO project. For example, former Major Dewey Funay was the Pentagon monitor for the whole USAF UFO project, and he is now a member of NICAP's Board of Governors. I could go on and on. Dr. Charles P. Olivier, president of the American Media Society, is a member of our Board of Governors. We have men from all walks of life on our Board of Governors who are experts in their fields. Our panel of special advisors include experts in every branch of science. And these men mean business. Some of them have seen UFOs.
It's an intriguing subject, sir. We're having phone calls right now, and we haven't even called for them. On this show, the phone lines are always open at DE86510, Devonshire 86510. We do ask that you be brief and concise and to the point, and that when you find you're on the air, please turn that radio down. You are on the air now.
Hello, Mr. Vincent.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, a few minutes back, you mentioned the sightings usually being isolated witnesses.
Yes, ma'am.
And I thought that really you should bring up the fact, Mr. Fowler knows about it, that one of the most famous sightings was witnessed by 400 people aboard an IGY ship. And photographs were obtained, and there were witnesses to the developing of the photographs. And perhaps you could get Mr. Fowler to tell about that, because it is so important, such a well-documented case, and this really shows that there are oftentimes big groups of witnesses.
Good. This is the thing that I was seeking, ma'am.
Yes, and also I would wonder if psychiatrists would be able to explain anything like that. Another one which had 37 witnesses was the Father Gill sighting in New Guinea.
Yes.
And I think if he would tell about both of those, it would present a good case for the UFO. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, 22. But we would like to have a response to the specific query of this caller who spoke of the 400 people on the IGY ship who had a mass sighting, I think it could be called that, and a Father Gill's sighting, which included, I think, 37 people in New Zealand, was it?
Was on one of the new islands in New Guinea. I forget the exact name of the island. First of all, let me just comment briefly on the Trindade sightings, which this woman mentioned. It took place on the IGY ship, or from the IGY ship, Almirante Saldana, on January 16, 1958. The officers on board noticed this object approaching Trindade Island. It was egg-shaped, or I would say a flattened sphere, encircled with a ring. Many of the officers came up on deck and watched this object. Almiro Barona, an expert submarine photographer, had his camera all set up on deck taking pictures of training exercises, and he had a wonderful opportunity to take four photographs. One also was taken from the island where, as the woman has mentioned, hundreds of people saw this UFO. After careful analysis by the Brazilian government, several statements came out to the press concerning this object. After the negatives were examined by the Brazilian Air Force and Navy photo labs, and the men were interrogated by the Brazilian military authorities. I'd like to quote, in fact, what the Navy minister said, the Brazilian Navy minister. I have a quotation right here.
It was a short one, sir.
Just a very, very short one.
I didn't mean that the way it sounded, incidentally.
Right.
With enthusiasm.
It was established that no photographic tricks are involved. The negatives are normal, and I might add that the president of Brazil actually came out with a public statement stating that the photographs were authentic. A Father Gill sighting took place on one of the islands, New Guinea, and he and his staff saw a UFO hovering over the harbor with 3.5 to 4 foot humanoids on a railing, looking like they were doing something to the object.
Now, you better define humanoid for us, sir.
Well, they had arms and legs. That's about all it can
little
be said.
Little things, huh?
He flashed a light at them, and one of them raised an arm and waved. It's fantastic, but the man's character, a complete character check was made on Father Gill by the Australian press, for example, and the people who were with him, they were all missionaries, and the natives and so forth, saw the object. A good sighting by reliable people, 37 of them, saw this object at fairly close range. I wish I could say more about it, but I don't have the details with me right now.
We're going to take a brief pause and come right back with the phone calls at DE86510. You're on the air now.
I'd like to address the gentleman by name, but I don't know.
Mr. Fowler.
I would like to, I'm a firm believer, and I read everything I can lay my hands on.
Yes, ma'am.
And he suggested that it was possible to get a booklet, a pamphlet. That was in the beginning of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Would he repeat that? I'd like very much to get it.
If you would, Mr. Fowler.
I'll repeat this for you and for all those who are listening. If you would like to have free information concerning our subcommittee work and the publications that are available, please send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Ray Fowler, Wenham, Massachusetts. That's
right.
Ray Fowler, Wenham, Massachusetts, Wenham.
Material on UFOs?
That's right. And you'll get a list of the material that is available from NICAP.
This program is absolutely fascinating.
Well, thank you. We hope you'll tell your friends, too.
And believe you me, if the scientists believe in it, I certainly do, too.
Well, there are scientists who do and scientists who do not.
Well, I'm with the ones who do.
Well, fair enough. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Devonshire 8-6510, you're on the air now.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
This is Heywood Vincent.
Mr. Vincent.
Yes,
I
sir.
I have two short questions for Mr. Fowler.
All right, sir.
Number one, is there any evidence whatsoever that these UFOs in any way have interfered with the malfunction of some of our jet planes? Number two, is there any evidence at all of the information coming out from the Antarctic that they have sighted these and that this information and photographs, and they'll be back here, take 6 months to come back?
All right, sir. Ray Fowler.
Right. The answer to your first question, there have been many documented cases where UFOs have interfered with the ignition of automobile headlights, engine, radio, and what have you.
So that they could have interfered with 707s, 808s, 880s, and that sort of thing.
This is possible. There also have been documented reports of UFOs approaching aircraft and the navigational instruments going haywire and the engine starting to quit. This is possible, but it is speculation. I'd warn you to...
Thank you.
Right. Also, there have been cases where UFOs have knocked out power. This question hasn't come up yet, but I want to say that so far NICAP has received no information concerning any UFOs responsible for the power knockout that we experienced. Now, the sighting in Chile, was it the Antarctic you mentioned?
Antarctic.
The Antarctic, right. There were three scientific bases involved down there. Personnel on all three scientific bases observed a huge lens-shaped UFO. 10 color photos were taken. Some photos were taken from aircraft. The UFO interrupted the electromagnetic detection instruments on the bases and also prevented radio communication at several points when the bases tried to contact each other concerning the sighting.
Is it true that those photos probably may have been made negative and will not show?
We don't know. NICAP, of course, is doing its best to get hold of these photos. And we hope to get copies of them.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thanks for the call, sir.
Right, sir.
We'll be right back. This is Heywood Vincent with Ray Fowler of NICAP.
Hello. I just have one question.
Surely.
And I'd like to know if any parts have been obtained from any of these UFOs.
The claim is yes, I believe, Mr. Fowler, isn't it?
One group, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization on Tucson, Arizona, claims to have a part or a piece of UFO. I'm sure that the United States...
in Baltimore?
I'm not too sure about that. I don't want to make... I'm not too sure about that. I would also mention the fact that AFR 200-2, the official Air Force General Order, has a whole section concerning what to do with physical objects falling from UFOs or parts of UFOs, how to package it, where to send it, and so forth. So our Air Force apparently, I believe, has obtained actual pieces of UFOs, if not more. Of course, they aren't telling us yet concerning the nature of these pieces, but they're very much interested in obtaining them.
We thank you for the call, too.
Thank you.
We're short on time now. The news is coming up at 7 o'clock. Ray Fowler certainly has many stories, much evidence. You have many questions. We'll try to accommodate all those that we can, starting at 7:15 following the news as we return to Devonshire 86510. So stay right with us. Now, this is Heywood Vincent again on Radio 68 WNAC's Boston Forum. Our phone number, DE86510. Our guest, Ray Fowler of NICAP. Our subject, UFOs. We do ask that you be brief, if you possibly will, and if you possibly can. We have lots of calls. We're opening up special lines that we may take care of all of you if we can, and if you'll let us, because I don't like cutting people off. I don't like setting time limits. This isn't our particular approach. So we ask you to be very kind to each other. I sound like Gary Moore suddenly. And I wish I had his loot. Devonshire 8, 6510.
Hello.
This is Heywood Vincent, yes.
Am I on the air?
Right now.
This is Edward Burnham in Cohasset.
Yes, ma'am.
We met once before.
Yes, indeed we did.
I'd like to ask your guest, Mr. Fowler, two things. One is a very fast question. I'd like to know what NICAP stands for.
NICAP, what does it stand for, Mr. Fowler?
The National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena.
Thank you. Then I would like to ask you if you have heard the comments that I heard on the news broadcast, I believe it was at 2 o'clock this afternoon on WNAC, of a mysterious radio signal that was coming from what they referred to as Area W3. And the explanation that they gave was that it was a hot star surrounded by gas, but they don't know what causes it.
I have heard nothing about this. I've been at work all day, and I haven't had a chance to listen to the radio, so I can't make any comment on this.
Well, I've been listening to all the news broadcasts since then, and they haven't referred to it. I wondered if there could possibly be any connection between...
Let me see. We'll check our newsroom right now and find out what we have on it.
I think it was the 2 o'clock broadcast.
I know several hot stars who are surrounded by gas, but they're in radio and television and wouldn't have anything to do with this.
Well, this was Area W3.
Area W3.
That's right.
And you think it was on our 2 p.m. news.
I'm practically positive.
We'll try to find out what we have on it.
2 o'clock. That was the news.
Fine. Thanks very much, ma'am.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Devonshire 86510. I'd like to emphasize before we take this next call something that I just learned this evening, and that is the fact that the late Dr. Carl Jung, one of the world's greatest psychiatrists and psychoanalysts, the pupil of Sigmund Freud, that Freud himself said that the pupil had exceeded the master in his mastery of the science of psychiatry and psychoanalysis, was an enthusiastic believer in UFOs and the fact of their existence. And if you would explain that just briefly, Ray.
Well, I think it'd be best just to quote what he said for NICAP. Quote, I am a NICAP subscriber. I'm grateful for all the courageous things you have done in elucidating the thorny problem of UFO reality. I do not possess sufficient evidence which would enable me to draw conclusions. The evidence available, however, is convincing enough to arouse a continuous and fervent interest. If it is true that the American Air Force withholds telltaling facts, then one can only say this is the most unpsychological and stupid policy one could invent. The public ought to be told the truth.
This is a quote from Dr. Young.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. Devonshire 86510, you're on the air now. Hello.
Hello, my name is Patty Pierce, and my friends and I have a club about astronomy, and we were wondering if someone met up with somebody, what would you do and who would you inform?
You mean from outer space, seemingly?
Yes.
If you were to actually effect a contact with someone from a spaceship or from outer space, what should they do, Miss Fowler?
I would say this to the young lady and to all the listeners, that if you see a UFO, that the first thing you ought to do is call your nearest Air Force base and try to remember as much as possible concerning the details of your UFO sighting, and contact your nearest NICAP representative. Contact both. The Air Force is the official organization you should report this UFO to, and immediately.
Oh, I see. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for the call. We've been asked, too, to repeat the address from which various forms of pamphlets and papers may be received, Ray, if you would, sir.
Right. If you will send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Ray Fowler, that's Ray, R-A-Y, Fowler, F-O-W-L-E-R, 13 Friend Court in Wenham, W-E-N-H-A-M, we'll get it right out to you.
33 Friend Court.
13 Friend Court.
13 Friend
right.
Court.
In Wenham, Massachusetts.
In Wenham, 13. And for those who have triskelecaphobia, look out. Here's the item from the news, incidentally, at 2 p.m. that our previous Cohasset caller had referred to. Scientists at Bedford say they cannot explain the behavior of radio noises coming from a spot in space labeled W3. This noise itself has been identified, but the way it acts is unknown. A team from MIT's Lincoln Lab says that the situation is surprising and extremely difficult to explain. Using the Air Force's 120 dish atop Haystack Hill, Lincoln Lab's team started studying W3 because a group of scientists in far off California had reported radio sounds that might be produced from an unknown source. This Haystack Hill study shows that these radio noises are caused by an excitation of a combination of oxygen and hydrogen known as hydroxyl radical. The report notes that the source is a hot star surrounded by gas from which radio energy is emitted. These studies show that unlike other known space radio emissions, these W3 noises have a sort of order to them. They are polarized, and there is no way to explain how they got that way at this time, whether this ties in with last Tuesday evening, as some think it might. We don't know. We'll try to find out more as this evening goes on, and we will on Monday evening on the forum, we will have the Dean of the School of Engineering from Northeastern University speaking with us and with other various and sundry experts, and we certainly aren't the experts you are, on the subject of the great Northeast blackout, which confused everyone on this past Tuesday. There have been ideas that this has been tied in with UFOs. There's been the idea that this has been controlled by space vehicles from other countries on Earth. We'll go into the various ramifications, and we will try to do something other than simply speculate. We hope to have some facts for you. We're at Devonshire 86510. You're on the air.
Yes, how do you do?
How do you do, sir?
I'm here with two questions. You've
yes,
already
sir.
Answered the third one, which had to do with the polarized source of sound from outer space.
Right, sir.
But two things. One is that every time one of these reports is, or let's say one of these groups talks about reports, a great point is made of the fact that the Air Force is withholding information. Now, this in itself sounds as though it's a built-in excuse. Most of the UFO literature that's been written has this sort of built-in thing that the Air Force is trying to cover things up. And this sort of makes it, I think that the information would stand much more strongly on its own 2 feet if this were left out, because I think this begins to sound like people are protesting too much their innocence. The other thing is that so much of the information is questionable. Like this blackout night on one of the other stations, there were a great number of calls yesterday or today about watching this rising light and giving the degrees of azimuth and so forth. But
yes, sir.
Those were planets.
Jupiter.
Yeah. So this sort of sheds the doubt.
Right.
And why do they protest so much, this Air Force interference or withholding? Because I'd like to believe in these things, but...
well, I'm not sure whether I want to believe in them or perhaps I should fear them. I don't know, you know.
what is your...
Mr. Fowler.
Right. Well, concerning Jupiter and all of these other natural phenomena misidentified as UFOs, we in NICAP agree wholeheartedly with you. It's unfortunate. There is sort of a loud noise level of very poor reports, and it's very hard to weed out the good from the bad. But what we're interested is in the good reports. Mm. Now, the United States Air Force has a project that has grown from a one-man group to a sizable project stationed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. It's part of the Air Force Systems Command, the Foreign Technology Division. And they know much more about UFOs than they have since, say, 1947, 1948. And there are many civilian scientists who would like to get hold of this information.
Oh.
And there are quite a, well, I would say the public at large would like to know more about it. We don't like to grind an axe with the Air Force. It isn't really their fault. I mean, they're just receiving orders from on high to keep quiet about this for many reasons.
This is really so, then.
Right. I have AFR 200-2, the General Air Force regulation right before me, and it's very obvious from reading this regulation that they take great pains to keep the good UFO sightings from the public.
So, in other words, this New Hampshire sighting, which took place in September, there were really Air Force people that got out there fast and tried to...
Definitely. There was a lieutenant... Well, first of all, there was a major and lieutenant, Lieutenant Brandt. I remember that name. They went out, they talked to the witnesses, they went through the field with a Geiger counter, they went and talked to people in the area, and they were back several times. The police told me that one night they came up there with a full colonel, full bird colonel, and sat in the field practically half the night.
Oh.
This is all documented.
Well, all right. You've told me. One more thing is, are these meetings open to the public that you hold? And if we write to Wenham, do we find out some information?
You'll get information concerning our national work. Our subcommittee doesn't hold meetings. We do give a lecture, a slide lecture, 35-millimeter slide lecture, entitled UFO Facts About Unidentified Flying Objects. And we go about giving this lecture to interested groups.
Good enough. We'll write and thank you.
Right.
Thanks for the call, sir. We're at Devonshire 86510. You're on the air now.
Thank you. Mr. Hayward?
Yes, sir.
I'd please like to speak to Ray Fowler.
He's on the phone with you.
Right here.
All right, Mr. Fowler?
Yes, sir.
I'm a member of the New England UFO Study Group.
Right.
And I'm very interested in flying saucers. And one of the meetings here, they had this article about some Air Force captain captured a UFO. And they said that there was two bodies in them, and one was completely decapitated. The other one was fairly well intact, about 3 inches high. And they took the spaceship, and they also took the body, and they put him in a bottle and put him in formaldehyde. And they're somewhere in the Smithsonian Institute. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, we hear tales like this all the time, and we've investigated the major ones, and we found that there is no fact behind reports like this. Now, it is possible that things like this have happened, but we frown upon reports like this unless there's actually documented evidence. There are all kinds of crazy rumors going about concerning captured UFOs, and there are some of these contact groups who claim that the UFO people are walking among us, and we have one in the Pentagon, and it gets way out. What NICAP is interested in is good, documented UFO sightings.
All right,
thanks for the call, too, sir.
Thank you. Fine.
Well, I better tell my favorite story then on this. It happens to be a fact in the sense of its legal results. It took place out in Arizona, where a fellow claimed, as a contactee, that a moon maiden in a spaceship landed near his farm, asked him to take a trip with her. She was a very charming, alluring creature in the spaceship. He did, a dalliance ensued, so he said, and told all of his friends. He also told his wife. His wife then sued him for divorce in the courts of Arizona, naming the Moon Maiden as correspondent, and she was granted the divorce. And this always intrigues me. You're tuned for Radio 68's Boston Forum. I don't think NICAP will accept that one, but it is on the court records, at least. Our guest is Ray Fowler of NICAP. Our subject at Devonshire 86510 is UFOs, unidentified flying objects, and what they mean to you and me. It is interesting to note very quickly, too, that the Royal Astronomer of England in 1956 stated, space travel is utter bilge. 1 year later, the first Sputnik was orbiting the Earth 15 times each day. Our phone number on Radio 68 Boston Forum is DEH6510. Our guest, Ray Fowler of NICAP, our subject, UFOs. More phone call. Let's go, Bob. Devonshire 86510, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Vincent.
Yes, ma'am.
And Mr. Fowler, I'd like to ask a question.
Please.
Mr. Fowler. Supposing there were a planet much more advanced than Earth with flying saucers, why would you think the beings on it would not make themselves known to us? What would they have to lose?
This is the $64 question that's asked everywhere where we have our lectures, wherever we go. We don't know any more than you do. All we can do is speculate.
Do you think that if the Earth ever progressed that far, that we'd ever avoid visiting a planet with cavemen on it?
Well, we're trying to, we think.
You can look at it this way. A race that is significantly far in advance of our own might be also very humanitarian and know the impact it would cause upon our civilization. That could be one reason. Another reason could be that there are very few of them. What I mean by them, the creatures themselves. Much of what we see have been seen could be machines, and they themselves could be just as vulnerable to us as we are to an Aborigine tribe, even though we are much more advanced. I'm sure that the Stone Age weapons could put us out of commission.
In any of the certifiable sightings, Ray, has there been any sort of a report of an attack of any sort? Any hostile action on the UFO's part?
People have been hurt by close hovering UFOs. I don't feel that this is directed. I think that maybe it was something to do with the propulsion system, what have you. They have been burnt. They've received shocks. This has happened many, many times when people have been approached by UFOs feeling an electrical-type shock from the UFO. And I would warn all listeners, if you have a see a UFO, don't get too close to it because of this very fact. But I don't feel that they are hostile. When an aircraft begins chasing them and shooting them, anything can happen. And, of course, we couldn't blame the occupants if they shot back, as it were.
By the same token, you don't invite them to play Mahjong with you.
That's right.
I mean, fair enough. Thanks for the call, too, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am.
DEH-6510, you're on WNAC.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Last Friday, on this same station, you had a program on UFOs.
Fred Gale did, show. Right,
uh-huh. Well, I was listening to it, and three or four people called and said they had seen a very brilliant object drop from the sky and come straight down.
Yes, sir.
Now, Wednesday, at approximately 4:45, I was traveling north, and directly ahead of me, I saw the very same thing. A brilliantly lit object, probably the size of a half a dollar, and it seemed to come straight down. It didn't go across the sky, but it seemed to come straight down. Could you guess, give me any comment on that,
Mr. Fowler?
I haven't heard of that particular sighting. Of course, we did go through what is known the torrid meteor shower not too long ago, and fireballs can look as big as a half dollar arm's length, sometimes bigger. It would be just a light in the sky report unless there was something more substantial than this. Now, the light came straight down and it stopped. and hovered for a while, and then moved off and hovered again and made a few right-angle turns and then shot straight back up. And then we would have what was called a UFO report.
I
well,
see.
I would say that this would be perhaps a meteor or a fireball that was witnessed, but who can say? There's just the insufficient evidence, I guess we would label that type of report.
We thank you for the call on it, sir.
You're welcome.
Devonshire 86510, you're on the air.
Yes, I would like to ask two questions. Why is it that the Air Force or anyone has not made contact with these UFOs, and why? What is the problem? Why is it so hard?
I'm not sure that they have or have not. We don't know because of official secrecy surrounding the subject.
I see. Well, has anyone else, other than scientists, have made any contact? I mean, have people said they've contacted them?
Well, the only type of contact, if you want to call it, that has been documented, we could take the Father Gill case, which we mentioned earlier, where Father Gill, members of his missionary staff, doctors and so forth, saw this UFO, round UFO, hovering over the harbor, not several hundred feet away, and Father Gill asked that a torch or a flashlight, I guess, would be the correct term to use for it. They call them torches over there, and flashed it at it, and one of the beings actually waved at Father Gill. Now, if you want to call us a contact, we do have documented reports such as this. For example, a police cruiser was chasing a UFO, I think it was around Lake Michigan, and they finally came upon it. It was hovering over a tree or a nearby field, and one of the officers turned on the rotating light on top of the cruiser. Several seconds later, a light flashed from the UFO, then it moved off. Now, but always was in response to something we did.
Why are they here?
We would love to know why they are here. It seems that in the early years, they might have been attracted by our atomic bomb explosions, although there were some sightings before our atomic age during the World War II. They seem to have made a general survey of the Earth, planet Earth. They've been seen throughout the world. They've been very, very interested in areas of really interesting places like atomic energy installations, harbors, and critical manufacturing areas.
Mm-hmm.
And this indicates that they're under intelligent control, because according to the laws of normal distribution, if UFOs are not intelligently controlled vehicles, the distribution of reports should be similar to the distribution of population in the United States, and this isn't so. They're very selective. In fact, the Air Force was so interested in this aspect of UFOs that they set up back in 1953 special cameras with diffraction gratings to take photographs of the UFOs and try to analyze their power source.
I see.
We thank you for the call, too, ma'am.
Thank you very much.
You're tuned for Radio 68 Boston Forum on WNAC. Our guest, Ray Fowler of NICAP, our subject, UFOs. Our phone number is Devonshire 86510. This is Radio 68 Boston Forum. My name is Haywood Vincent. My guest is Ray Fowler. And you're on the air with us.
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Fowler.
Please, ma'am.
I'm calling from Dorchester.
Mm-hmm.
And my son and daughter and I, on Saturday, October the 30th, sighted what we thought was a UFO over Dorchester, about 7:30 in the evening. And we reported it to the Hanscomia base.
Yes, ma'am.
And I was wondering if you knew if other people made that same sighting.
Could you briefly describe the object to me?
It was a very bright light when it was here over Dorchester, and it seemed to have quite a bit of depth while it was here. And it hovered very low, almost seemed to come down to the treetops.
Was it flashing? Flashing lights in sequence?
It was steady, and then it would go off for an instant.
And then come back on again.
And then come back on, just a fraction of an instant.
Right. This object that you've described is an advertising plane operated by Joseph Bodiner. He is a manager of the Skylight Advertising Company in Boston. He flies out of Beverly Airport, and he goes right over Dorchester. I think he's flying October 30th. We get more reports of his advertising plane than of anything else.
I thought it might be that, but the pattern of the flying didn't seem as if it could possibly be a plane.
We
reported it anyway.
Sure. Well, it's good that you did. His plane can take on so many different configurations, and what we do, we have an understanding with him. We call up, we get his flight plan for the nights, and we find that nine times out of 10 is his aircraft, although people describe it as everything you can imagine.
Well, we spent quite a terrible weekend.
Right.
I had hoped it was Mass Helicopter Airlines, frankly, but then you can't win them all. Thanks for the call, ma'am.
All right,
we're at Devonshire 86510 on WNAC. You're on the air now.
Hello.
Yes.
I tuned in late, and I was interested in getting the name and address of the people who give the slide lecture on UFOs.
Well, the organization is NICAP. You may contact the chairman of its subcommittee here in the state, mm-hmm. Ray Fowler, mm-hmm. at 13, that's 13, Friend, as in chum, Friend Court in Wenham, Massachusetts.
Wenham.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Enjoy your program very much.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Devonshire 8, 6510 is our calling number. Ray Fowler is our guest. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm also a member of the New England UFO Study Group.
Yes, sir.
And I wanted to point out that the member who called before talked about the little men in the Smithsonian. That report was strictly brought up as an example of an unconfirmed wild rumor.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also like to ask Ray Fowler if he'd care to comment on the Barney Hill case, which broke in the papers a couple of weeks ago.
The Barney Hill case, the official NICAP position on the Barney Hill case is as follows. Number one, the first part of the sighting, NICAP feels, could be true. There are many people who have described UFOs hovering over their cars and so forth, movements inside the object. The second part, NICAP just does not know. NICAP is the only organization which has tapes or transcripts from the tapes taken during the psychiatric examinations, the hypnosis sessions, and so forth. All we can say is that the tapes are for real. Both Mr. and Mrs. Barney Hill related their story under hypnosis, and it seems to tally with their account. But all the rest is sheer speculation. We are not convinced that it is true.
I see. Thank you very much.
Okay, sir. Thank you for the call, too. Devonshire 8, 6510. You're on the air.
I would like to ask your guest a question.
Please.
And I hang up to hear his comment.
All right, fine.
Can these objects be detected by a certain signal they would emit? All right?
All right, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Fowler, can these objects be detected by a certain sort of a signal that they might emit, is the question.
I'm not sure. There have been cases where police cruisers have picked up strange beeping and static from UFOs in the area. I imagine the Air Force has been thinking along these lines for years and has set up special stations and so forth, scientifically manned stations, to see if this is so. But NICAP, not being a real fully equipped scientific organization, is not equipped to do things like this. What we're doing is trying to encourage civilian scientists and civilian investigations and to encourage our government to release more information on this so we know the answers to these questions. But they have been picked up by radar. The sightings down in Antarctica in July, the electromagnetic detection instruments were affected, the radios were affected, the objects were object was tracked on radar, I believe, plus seen from the air and from the ground as a solid, intelligently controlled, maneuverable object. So there are other means of detecting UFOs rather than the eye. Heat has been felt, for example. They've left indentations in the ground. They've affected the ground, scorched the ground, left indentations, and so forth. So we aren't just dependent upon our five senses per se.
Thank you, Mr. Fowler. You're on the air now.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Frank McLean from Hyde Park.
Yes, sir.
And one question I have to ask Mr. Fowler is this. You'll recall that Major Donald Kehoe wrote a book on UFOs some time ago.
Yes.
And in that book, he referred to a planetoid, or rather a planet, that the Air Force referred to as the most predominant place that UFOs could emanate from, that being Wolf 359. Now, just a short time ago, a woman called regarding a report that was made on a radio this afternoon.
Right, sir.
About radio transmission coming from the area Wolf 3.
Wolf 3, right.
I wonder if that's the same general area.
Well, this isn't actually called Wolf 3. It's called W3, yes. It could stand for the same thing, yep.
I don't think it's the same area. The book that Major Kehoe wrote, I think, referred to Hermann von Oberth, who was the German, he was a German scientist, von Braun and Others were trained under him. He was called the father of German rocketry, I guess. He came out with a statement. By the way, he is now retired from Huntsville, Alabama. He's back in Germany. He feels strongly that UFOs are interplanetary, and he has an outfit or an organization very similar to NICAP, not as large, but one which does civilian UFO investigation.
I see. Okay, fine. Well,
thanks for the call, sir.
Okay.
WNAC's Devonshire 8, 6510 is our number. You're on the air.
Yes, since I dialed in, someone has asked a question about this hypnotic interview. I'm talking about the newspaper story that ran in a series of three the other night, and I didn't get a chance to see the end of it, but is this what Mr. Fowler says? They have little doubt, or they doubt that it's a true story. I'd like to hear his
right. Well,
I'll hang up and listen.
Okay,
right.
Sir.
Thanks
for
the call.
We feel that we know for a fact Mr. Walter Webb, who is head lecturer at Hayden Planetarium, has studied the Hill case for about 4 years now and has recently submitted a very detailed report to NICAP. He, the psychiatrist in the Hills, are the only ones who have actually had access to the tapes of these psychiatric examinations, hypnotic sessions, and so forth. And he has told me that the results, the information on the tapes is even more dramatic than what the traveler story carried. However, we feel that this is not sufficient proof to say that these people actually did experience this encounter with UFOs, abduction and so forth. It's very fantastic. Personally, I'm not speaking for Nike, personally I find it very hard to accept. However, there still remains...
It has overtones of the search for, what was her name, Bridie Murphy.
Right, but these people, a complete character check was done on the people, and they're solid Class A citizens as far as back as you can go. The hypnosis sessions are genuine, conducted by an eminent psychiatrist, and one must explain these things, but there just isn't enough real strong evidence for NICAP to come out with a statement at this time, whether it indeed accepts this as true or not. That's about as much as I could say about it right now.
We thank you for the call, too. Long-distance call, let's save them some dough, huh? You're on the air now.
Hi, Haywood.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Fowler, this is Gene Lonnie up in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Hi, Gene.
And I'm truly excited about these UFOs. I've even subscribed for 2 years to this crazy magazine, Fate. And
what's it called, sir?
Pardon me?
Fate?
Fate. F-A-T-E is the name of the magazine.
As in Kismet, huh?
And, of course, I don't like the juvenile way that they report the sightings that they constantly broadcast on,
yes,
you know, or publish in the magazine.
Yes, sir.
It's poorly written. But I'm a firm believer, nevertheless, of UFOs. I've never seen one. It's, let's say that I want to believe in it, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, number one... I've listened to this show all the way from the beginning to the end, and I take many sides of opinions of these various people that have called.
Surely.
Now, number one, if the UFO is hush-hushing this whole business, why do they do that? Why don't they want us to know this? Now, that's point number one.
The Air Force, sir, or the actual force controlling the UFOs?
Well, either way you want to put it.
All right, both, okay. Either way. All right.
Now, if this is so, that these UFOs are in our atmosphere and so on, and they are intelligent beings and so on. Now, there has been some word from Chile that they're going to return in December. You've heard something about this.
Right, sir. Right.
All right. Now, you can imagine a mass hysteria that's going to break loose should this be true. Now, should it be true, why doesn't the Air Force lift the lid off of this? In other words, even years previous, okay?
Well,
other
perhaps
words,
in Chile they will.
Area from this whole thing.
Oh, my.
And that's point number two. Point number three, if it's not true and the UFOs are not here, then they should certainly be able to disprove the UFO sightings as far as these radio reflected lights are concerned and everything like this. I don't go off and, like this lady called, with all due respect to her, I mean, she should be more careful when she looks at something and saying, well, here, I've seen many airplanes fly with radio signs on them, you know, I mean, flashing red lights and, you know, advertising things, neon signs and things.
Well,
like
I think
this.
One of the valuable purposes of NICAP,
yes,
is to explain rationally and
these things and to try to avoid mass hysteria, sir.
Yes, yep. Well, that's what I would like to know, why they don't take that into consideration. And I've talked to a man in the radio business, and he tells me that evidently the government gets together and they say that there is something to this. Now, why don't they just alert the general public? Why the big secrecy?
I believe...
And the other thing, as far as these different broadcasts are coming in, I get interference from TV, but this is nothing more than fellows with these command radios or something.
That's right. You can get interference, sir, if somebody has an X-ray machine in your area.
Yep. That's mainly what it really is.
It could easily be that, sir.
Right. Now, I'll listen to the answers.
Okay,
I hope
sir.
You've got them.
We're going to try.
I didn't mean to take this much time, but...
Thanks for the call.
I want to believe, but let's hear the facts.
Okay? Thanks for the call, sir.
Thank you.
One can only speculate the reasons why this is being kept from the public. Of course, no government wants to admit to the public that there are intelligently controlled objects coming from who knows where. We don't know why they're here, and we can't do anything about it.
Ray, you're off mic a little bit.
Oh, excuse me.
Thank you, sir.
Right. Brookings Institute, report number 242, prepared for NASA in 1961, has a chapter entitled The Implications of a Discovery of Extraterrestrial Life. And they point out many reasons why the public information concerning such discovery should be kept from the public. What most amazing to me in one way is that it states, quote, if superintelligence is discovered, the results become quite unpredictable. It has been speculated that of all groups, scientists and engineers might be the most devastated by the discovery of relatively superior creatures. Briefly, it covers all aspects of society as we know it, and it paints a very pessimistic picture. Why? Because the public isn't prepared, philosophically, theologically, and what have you, for such a revelation. Nightcap's contention is that our government and other governments of the world should have a public information program gradually preparing the public for such a revelation. The least they could do is release more pertinent information on UFOs. There are many members of Congress, for example, who feel that open congressional hearings should be held on UFOs. Up to this time, all congressional hearings have been classified. Congress John W. McCormick, for example, has stated for NICAP, I feel that the Air Force has not been giving out all the information it has on the unidentified flying objects. Symington, the public has sound reason for being confused about this. The public should be given all information which would not adversely affect our national security. We feel strongly that the public should be given... that the Air Force should be given some information concerning UFOs to the public, a public information program, if you will. And this is what NICAP is trying to do.
Thank you, Ray. I'd like to express our sincere thanks to each of you who has phoned in this evening, to the many of you who are still standing on our phone lines because we simply couldn't get to you, for your patience and your understanding. Ray has certainly presented as clear and illuminating a picture of the overall field that is UFO as I have ever been privileged to hear, and we thank him. I'd like to say the views expressed are seen by speakers of their own, not those essentially of the RKO stations are our sponsors. Our program is produced by Bob Walsh. My name is Haywood Vincent.